So here we are, worldwide live through BBS Radio online. It is 6 o'clock, perfect timing. Thank you all for being here on BBS. We have a group of people here on the conference call. Fine. Gwyn is here, and I noticed the announcement that we have an open mic tonight.
Is Terry here?
Yes, she's not.
Sedona Jim here. I hope everybody's happy and healthy.
Good evening, Jim. Thank you for being here.
Good evening, my friend Heiss.
All right.
Okay.
Ed Jeffrey and Raleigh.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Good. Kicking high.
Who's that heavy breather, Heiss?
Who's the breather? So the breather will find out. Sorry, he had to mute you. You're breathing in your phone. You can unmute yourself by pressing star 6. I believe. Uh-oh. Somebody else breathing.
I'm not breathing in the phone. As a matter of fact, I'm not breathing at all.
Okay.
Somebody's breathing in the phone.
I'm going to try to tackle this person. Hello, Terry.
Hi. Hello.
How are you?
Someone stop breathing in the phone.
Good. Thank you.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hi.
Thank you for being here, Terry.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Love you, Terry.
Thank you.
All right. Again, I welcome all those who are here online through BBS Radio. We cannot hear you, but it's just fantastic that you're here.
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Gwyn, I can't hear you in case you're talking. Did I mute you? Hold on. Yes, you're muted. Sorry. Here you are. You're back.
Maybe I was the heavy breather.
Maybe you were. All right. Okay, let's get the recording going.
This conference is being recorded.
Hey, this is September 15th, 2014. And Gwyn, Terry, I usually say Gwyn and Terry in Sedona. Terry in Sedona and Gwyn in North Hollywood. Ta-da! And Heiss in Nigelia. Wait a second. Is that right? Nigelia?
Yep. Can you make a correction to your mic, Gwyn? It's a little unclear.
Yeah, I always get confused between your last name and your city.
I have difficulty with it myself.
I don't blame you. All right. Is that better now on my mic?
It's a little better.
Okay. I don't know what's wrong here. Okay. You know, I'm in an open mic, and I'm in North Hollywood, and I'm in the middle of having, like, some synchronicities. And I wanted to share with you how synchronicities occur for me, because a lot of times I know we talk about that, and David Wilcock even wrote a book called Synchronicity. And synchronicities are ways that can magically bring things into your life that seem impossible. And the thing about them is, from my experience anyway, there's no way to have a synchronicity happen out of willpower. It's making stupid decisions. I shouldn't say stupid, okay? Take back the word stupid. It's about making kind of decisions that don't seem logical at the time and that they're out of your box. They're not in your box. They're out of your box. And yet you do something out of your box and there's a certain degree of randomness in it. And then something happens and you say, how did that happen? How did that happen? It couldn't have happened, and yet it did. And then I go back and I look through all of the situations that led to the synchronicity, and it is like I have come to the conclusion that the best way that I can put into words for some kind of understanding is that we exist right now in other dimensions, and we are the part of us that's in other dimensions is moving around, it's creating things, it's creating circumstances, it's creating events, but they're not preordained, because when something starts to get set up in the other dimensions, you don't have a clue. At least I don't have a clue. And Kerry Friedman was telling me Jesus could track that, and he had a clue. So he knew what was being set up in other dimensions. He could read it. I don't know if Jerry Brown can do that or not. You should ask her. But I don't see it. But I get impulse to do something. And oftentimes when I'm impulse, I don't even realize it's coming from another dimension. It just seems like an idea that pops into my head. And then I have to follow it through. And I don't know that it's leading to a synchronicity. Although maybe I'm getting better at reading the energy of something so that I can tell. But when it happens, it's amazing. So I'm in the middle of the synchronicity situation right now in L.A. And I wanted to take it apart. But before I take the one in L.A. apart, I wanted to take some of the other synchronicities I've experienced and take them apart. And the reason I'm doing it is because I want you all to see how this works so that you don't miss opportunities in your life that are trying to happen that you have created on the other side, and how it feels when it's, you know, impulsing you. Okay, because this is a big premise of saying we're creating on the other side. We don't know what we're creating. We attract people to us. We attract circumstances to us. And usually when it comes in, it's like so easy. You can even miss it because you thought you're going to have to work really hard for that. And I've learned myself to pay, you know, to pay close enough attention so that when it happens, I can identify it. And so one story, I think this is one of the more amazing stories, but I could talk for a few hours on synchronicities that I've had. Well, one of the most amazing stories is when, this was like 35 years ago, in the music business, Jerry, you're making, it sounds like you're chewing or rattling papers, so keep your mic quiet.
I'm going to mute.
Okay. Well, just remember to unmute, okay? I was in the music business, and I had like three amazing synchronicities that tied me into Brian Holland. I don't want to tell all three. I'll just tell one. And that was, I was already in their office. And Brian is a very, very famous songwriter. Wrote all the songs for the Supremes and the Four Tops, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You. He was one of the founding songwriters in Motown, and his songs became legendary. In fact, it's hard to walk into a restaurant without them playing his songs in the background. And so people like that are really hard to get to. You can never, you know, you can't get to them through willpower, because there's a whole protective kind of wall around them, and they keep people at a distance. But, okay, I'll tell you two of the synchronicities. One was I dropped a tape off in their office, and I didn't expect anything to come of it, but I dropped the tape off, and then I left their office. And I walked to a restaurant about two blocks away called the Copper Penny. And at the time, I looked like a total hippie. I was a vagabond. I had a guitar case with leather patchwork all over it. My hair was really long. And I'm sitting at the counter of the restaurant. I'm talking to the guy next to me. And I'm telling him all these stories about how I was hitchhiking around the country and writing songs and blah, 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 blah. And he listened to me for about 10 minutes, which surprised me. And then he said, hey, I write some songs too. And I said, oh, do you ever get anything recorded? And he said, yeah, a few things here and there. My name's Brian Holland. Well, I had enough of these situations at this point where I realized, oh, my God, this is a synchronicity. And I said, oh, you won't believe this. I got all excited. I dropped the tape off in your office, and I'm just here. And now you're sitting next to the counter with me. And so he said, oh, what's your name? Winfrey. He said, William Free. Well, we're going to have to listen to that, okay? And then he left. Well, nothing happened for a few months. And I decided I should go back to his office again, because I knew it was a synchronicity. I could feel the energy of it. And so I was, I'm going to tell all three stories now. I'm walking to it. I was on one side of Hollywood, and I was walking up to my car that was in the Hollywood Hills, and I was pounding. This white Mercedes drove by me really slowly on this very small street, and I looked at it, and there was Brian's brother, Edward Holland, the driver. Now, some of you might remember the songwriting group of the Motown was called Holland, Dozier, Holland. And if you don't know their names, you certainly remember their songs. How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You, Please, Mr. Postman, I Hear a Symphony, Standing in the Shadows of Love, Baby Love, and some of the Temptation songs and whatever. I mean, probably, you know, songs that were all classics that broke Diana Ross. But now I see Edward Holland driving down the street, this small street, after I made the decision to go to their office. And I said, oh, my God, this is a synchronicity. Oh, my God, there he is. This is really going to be big. And I pounded on the window of his car. And you know what? He didn't drive away. I looked like a nutcase. And he opens the window and says, can I help you? And I said, oh, you won't believe. I was just spouting. You won't believe this. I was on my way to your office, blah, 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 blah. And he says, I met Brian, and blah, 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 blah. And so he said, well, why don't we set an appointment up for tomorrow? Because we're not there today. So we set an appointment, and I went to the appointment, and these two guys are sitting there listening to my songs and say, hey, he writes really good lyrics, doesn't he, Brian? And Brian says, yeah, he sure does, you know, but I don't like his melodies too much. Now, my melodies were like not in the Motown melodies. I couldn't write Motown melodies if my life depended on it. But maybe we can rewrite some of those melodies. So now I was coming in, and they were working on some of my lyrics, and they were coming out with some of the melodies, new melodies, and then a few months later, now this was the amazing one. This was the amazing one. It was a hot day in Venice. If you heard this story before, excuse me for saying it again, but I want to take this apart because I want to try to figure out how the universe works to create something like this. here it was, a hot day in Venice. I used to walk on Venice Beach, which was like the artsy section of L.A., the bohemian section. I used to walk on it. There were all these vendors on the street, and probably at least three times a week, I would take a walk up and down the street. And one day, it was very hot, and I went into a bar, and I don't go into bars. I very rarely drink at all. You know, I might one drink a year. I don't crave alcohol. But I went in the bar to get a drink, and I'm sitting on the bar stool, and this woman next to me starts talking to me, and she was getting drunk. And we really engaged. I told her I was a songwriter and blah, 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 blah. And she loved jazz music, and we had a connection. And so she took me home with her. It was the only time in my life that that ever happened. Not that I didn't think of it happening, but it never happened. I never went into bars, and if I did, I never talked to anybody. So now I'm seeing her, and I like her. And it was like a month later, she tells me she's moving. And she's moving into this luxury apartment building in a spare room of her girlfriend. It's called the Marina City Club. And so I started seeing her there. And one morning, I left her apartment, and I glanced at the door next door to hers. There was an envelope on the door that said, to Brian Holland. Okay? She moved next door to Brian Holland. Think about that. Think of the total impossibility of it. And they now knew shortly thereafter that I had a girlfriend who was living next door to them, to him. And they kind of decided that God must have sent me. And so they gave me the key to their office. They gave me their stationery. They said, send your songs out on our stationery. We never had any kind of contract. We just had a handshake. I said, well, if I get something recorded, I'll give you guys 10%. That sounds fair. And here I am. You know, I never took any money from them. I'm living in this little apartment, and I'm trying to make demos, because now I can get into any office in Hollywood. And I have to just say, this is Winfrey from the Holland Group, and I'd be in. And I was sure I was going to be successful. And then it got screwed up. I won't go into that. That's not what I want to talk about this call. I want to look at the synchronicities, okay? And it's like I want to talk about the way things had to be going on. And I may not be right because I don't know. But speculation here about how could things like that occur. I mean, I used to feel like it was just magic. And if God was arranging things, that's what I used to say. Now I see it slightly different way. When you build in the factor that you are in the other realms, part of you, and is aware of things that you're not aware of in this realm, and you start making spontaneous, impulsive decisions with no reason for them, you are now like potentially connecting with the part of you that's in the other realms, that's doing things, that's arranging things. So let's just say I'm walking by this bar, all right? And here's this woman sitting. Well, let's just go back to Brian, me meeting him in the restaurant. Now, I didn't really decide to go to that restaurant. I was walking down Highland Avenue. I looked at the restaurant, and I said, again, another hot day. Good thing for hot days in L.A., because I impulsively decided to sit, to go in the restaurant. And then I intuitively decided to sit next to this black guy DeBoer. Now, I think I knew on an intuitive level, on another side level, I knew that this was somebody to meet. And then the day that I picked to walk to my car and go to their office, and I said, I remember thinking, haven't heard from them for 3 months, this is the day to go. Somehow I knew his brother was going to be driving down that street at the same moment that I was walking to my car. And when I walked into the bar, on some intuitive level, this woman in the bar already had a girlfriend living in the Marina City Club who was living next door to Brian Holland. And somehow I knew that, but not anywhere near a conscious level. I made those choices with no awareness that any of that was going to happen. And it's like, if I think about making choices like that, I blow it. It's like, it's a very refined sensitivity to tune in to those choices that create such magical, impossible events, okay? Like, here's another one. Jim, are you there? Wait a second. Jim, 2-6. Hello, Jim. Hello, Jim. Okay. Well, I was going to tell a story about Jim, but I don't want to tell it without his permission. That's Jim, Sedona Jim. So I tell a story about DK. And I was writing articles for this metaphysical magazine, and I was making, I think, $150 every time I wrote an article.
Hello?
Oh, there you are, Jim.
Wynn, I'm right here.
Okay. Can I tell the story of how we met and DK?
And DK?
Yeah, otherwise known as...
Oh, of course you may.
Well, I'm not going to talk about it without your permission because I've got to expose you a little bit, okay?
Well, you're not the first to expose me, nor are you probably the last.
All right. Okay. Well, okay, let me tell this story, all right? DK, for those of you that don't need... know who DK is, it would be personal relationship number one who was channeling. And maybe I'll start using her name again, but she didn't really want me to, so that's why I'm calling her DK. And DK was in Alaska, and she was living near her sister. And she was participating with us from Alaska. She would come on the calls. We even had a session once. Jim, you're rattling noise there.
Wynn, I'm on Terry's phone right now. I had to leave the phone for a minute. I'm trying to get you back again on my cell phone. Would you give me just 1 minute to do that? Because I'd like to give this phone back to Terry.
Yeah, okay. So,
okay, now, I don't know. Let me give, oh dear.
So now, DK is on the phone with us. She's doing calls. We're doing little workshops. We actually did some sessions where people would submit questions, and 3-hour Saturday session where it would go from DK to Terry, back to DK, and... And there's all that noise there. And then suddenly DK tells me she has a new boyfriend. up in Alaska, and she was preoccupied with her new boyfriend, and she wasn't coming into the calls anymore. And for the next 2 years, she kind of like took a back stance in the whole thing we're doing. Really, I don't think she's ever really come back from that. Well, in any case, I was pretty annoyed with this guy. I didn't know who he was, but I felt that it caused her to take a lesser decision at the time. And the guy lived in Florida, and so she ended up moving from Alaska to Florida. And then the two of them moved to Cape Cod, to her mother's house. And this is over a two-year period of time. And we're still doing these calls. And finally, there was something that happened where the guy was thrown out on the street and was virtually almost homeless, living in somebody's living room. And DK calls me and says, could you help? Could you help? He's threatening suicide. He doesn't want to live anymore. And this is the last thing I wanted to do to help here. But she convinced me to call the guy. And I called him, and he was really despondent. And I said, you know, if you come to Sedona, I'll help you get some jobs playing piano. He played piano in convalescent homes, and he was supposed to be really talented. So, and he did crossword puzzles for the New York Times. So he came to Sedona. In fact, I think I even paid part of his plane ticket. And I picked him up. I drove 100 miles to the airport to pick him up. And none of this was, you know, I'm saying, what am I doing this for, right? And finally, I take him back to you know, Sedona, and he is now, I tried to get him to stay in my RV, and he said he was claustrophobic, so he's going to stay in the spare bedroom, and eventually, you know, it was supposed to be a very short-term thing. He'd be finding a place and getting gigs, and maybe he would like Sedona. Then I couldn't get him out of the bedroom. He didn't want to leave. And Terry seemed to really like him, and I thought he was really obnoxious. And he didn't believe in anything we were doing, and didn't believe anything we were doing was possible, and he was pretty metaphysically unsophisticated, even though he was fairly intelligent. In fact, I think he had a PhD, he owned a restaurant, he had all these talents, but he probably didn't have no metaphysical implications or memories. And, of course, I'm talking about Jim, otherwise known as Sedona Jim. And maybe I want to give him an opportunity. Jim, is there anything you want to add to that story without saying anything negative about anybody? Hello, Jim. Are you there? All right. Well, in any case, Jim started cooking for Terry, and it was like, aside from the fact that he didn't believe in anything we're doing, it was like almost a obsession with him to go to the store, get the food, and cook her a gourmet dinner every night. And it was kind of like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And I said, well, he's afraid of being thrown on the street, so he's trying to make himself important. And I talked to Terry about it, and Terry says, you know what, I think Jim was one of the angels that fell from a high realm into this place. And I said, yeah, but he's still fallen. What are we going to do? You know. So in any case, this is going on for about a year. And things aren't significantly shifting. And sometimes I would really irritate Jim, or he would really irritate me. We would get into all kinds of fights and screaming matches. And then finally, I had this idea that St. Catherine, you know, there's a very good case that Terry was St. Catherine, almost open and shut case, and that St. Catherine was going into the local church in Siena, Italy. She wasn't a saint. She was just Catherine. And she was channeling, and they thought God was speaking to them through her. And eventually, all her channelings at the time were compiled into a book called St. Catherine's Dialogues with God, which is still available on Amazon. And, of course, Terry was the spitting image of St. Catherine. And she had a lot of things in her personality that were similar to St. Catherine's. So I said, somebody in that church must have been grounding the energy for her to do this. And so I started reading the story of St. Catherine because I was thinking, could that have been me? And I ended up finding the story of this church official that was sent from the Vatican to go investigate St. Catherine and to see who this weird woman is and see if she was demonic who was channeling in the church. They didn't accept her right away. In fact, it was a threat.
Hello, Wynn. It's Jim. I lost you before. I'm terribly sorry.
That's okay. We're talking about you behind your back, okay?
Then I'll just hang up and imagine.
Well, you can listen in, okay? So now, there's this guy named Raymond who went to Siena, Italy, to investigate Catherine, and he became really endeared with Catherine, and he decided she was legitimate. And so he became her companion, would travel with her, and get this, St. Catherine was anorexic. Historically, she died from not eating, and this guy, Raymond, was cooking for her and trying to make sure she survived, but he didn't succeed, okay? And, of course, guess who Raymond looked like? He looked like Jim. And not only that, When Catherine died, Raymond wrote the biography of Catherine, and both that biography is probably what got Catherine sainted, and it also got Raymond sainted. It's a fascinating story. Go look it up. St. Catherine of Siena, Raymond, I forget, Raymond of some city, which I can't remember. Look up St. Catherine Raymond biography, and you can read it. It's amazing. And I became sure that that was Jim. And again, looking at the bizarre way that the universe works, that I would have to think that when... This is my speculation. When Jim met VK, somehow they got together. But the real coming together there was the psychic on the other side thing, feeling the energy of Terry to complete the action of being supportive of Terry in this lifetime. And it took 2 years for it to unfold for Jim to finally end up in the space of Terry. And I don't even know if Jim believes any of this. He probably doesn't. But Terry and I are really sure about it. And the pictures really, you know, I don't have a picture of a young Jim. I did have a picture of a young Jim. He had sideburns. Raymond had sideburns. They really have the same essence. If anyone wants to see the picture, ask me, and I'll send it to you, okay? I didn't put it up publicly because I thought Jim would be embarrassed. But nonetheless, Jim is still cooking. Now he believes in our work. If we die tomorrow, he might even write a biography about us. Who knows? But in any case, it's like...
I'd prefer to write it prior to my death.
Oh, no. If we died tomorrow, did I say if you died tomorrow? Yeah, you should die, you should write it prior to your death. But in any case,
I have no intention of dying for many, many years.
Right. So I was just telling the story because
yes.
I think it's an amazing synchronistic thing of how you came into our space in such an unlikely way, okay? And, you know, I was so close to saying, no, I don't want you to come here. I don't want you to come here. I don't want you to be around. And I didn't say it. And I even sent you money for your plane ticket. And there you were. And here you are. So I think that's an incredible linkage, inexplicable kind of stuff.
Well, let me just say something, please. I've learned over 68 years that life is a series of steps. My steps went up, my steps went down. When the steps went down so far, I was blessed to have met you and dear Terry. And all of a sudden, I'm stepping up again, and I have no intention of ever stepping down.
Hmm. Well, good. And in any case, you know, you went from a point of view of being a complete skeptic and saying, this can't be real, but these are nice people, to actually thinking it's real, right?
Yes.
How did your mind work to do that?
I've heard many things from your calls, from your book. You don't think I read it, but I read most of it, and what I read struck a chord. And I'm putting all these things together, and I'm changing. I'm changing in a way that feels positive to me. I don't care about others. I care about what's positive to me and how I affect others as long as I can make them feel positive too. And you presented me with material that makes me feel not only positive about myself, but wanting to exude that positivism to others.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing. And Terry, you want to share anything about this story? Because I think it's really a cool story. You know, it's stories like this, you know, the premises of what we do are so far out. And, I mean, anyone that's checking us out kind of got to hit their head with a hatchet for a while to say, oh, my God, this is true. And this is one of those stories that there's a lot of them, but it's not in believing anything. It's not believing that we're talking to the Elohim or believing that somebody was someone famous in a past life. It's the amazing synchronistic things that come together. Are you there, Terry?
Yeah, I'm here. It was very interesting because Jim arrived just after I had decided to not eat anymore, to explore living on sunshine, and hadn't eaten for about 2 weeks. And then he said, would you like a little bit of this, or would you like a little bit of that, or would you like some of this? And eventually I said, okay, I'll try a little. And then then I got back eating again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I wanted to make one comment about Brian Holland. And, you know, some of you have heard the story about, if this intrigues you, if you have a connection with Egypt, you should listen to the workshop, egypt.intelligent-infinity.com, egypt.intelligent-infinity.com, because there is the story in that workshop of very carefully constructed, where I convinced myself that I was connected to this Egyptian pharaoh by the name of Akhenaten, and that the reason that I had such a strong connection with Brian Holland is because he was one of my musical directors. And so that's how it came back. And he was a musical director in Egypt, and there was a big energy connecting us. And that's why we kept having those synchronicities. Now, I call this an open mic. I wanted to tell one more story, and some of you were on the Monday call, and I played a song of a guy by the name of Pat Vegas, who was in a band called, what's the name? He had that song, Come and Get Your Love, and it was a Native American. Redbone. It was a Native American band.
Yeah.
And then I go out to lunch yesterday with Pat Vegas, and there are all these things tying us into each other. Well, his former wife is kind of acting as his helper and manager, and his co-host on his show, Ashella, had been coming to our calls for 6 months, and that she decided. She wanted me to come onto our show and talk about the Elohim, and it's kind of like the Hollywood show. Hi, welcome to the Hollywood. You know, it's like, how am I going to fit my energy in there? And so I said, okay, of course I'll do it. And then she wanted me down here live and in the studio, so I came down on Sunday. And then on Monday, we go to a restaurant with Pat and her and Ariel, and I feel a familiarity with Pat. Pat is the guy who was in the band, one of the singers of the song, Come and Get Your Love. And so I said, Pat, do you have any connection with Egypt? And he tells me, well, you know, I feel a connection with this Egyptian pharaoh, Tutankhamun. And he says, people tell me I look just like his mask. So who was Tutankhamun? He was Akhenaten's son. All right? Get this. And we start talking about all of that, and the energy is just going through the roof. He said, I can feel the energy of this. And I was telling him stuff about, I gave him my book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And I really didn't expect him to read it. I didn't expect him to open it. Most people in Hollywood, you know, you give them something, they'll never look at it. The next day I'm in the studio, the first thing I'm doing, I sit down in the studio and I say, and he tells me, can you tell me more about this Ra? Who is Ra? He's totally intrigued with Ra, which is what Akhenaten was all about. So, you know, I'm telling you these stories, and I know it's kind of entertaining, but I wanted you to know that synchronicities can be a long time in the making. Sometimes they come in, like in the case with Jim, 2 years later, and it just sits there. And if you notice, oftentimes there's always an act of spontaneity or kindness that connected the energies. And that just think that you're always existing in other realms And see if you can read those, practice it, the intuitive feeling of what you are creating in the other realms. Because you're creating stuff. And then, whether it's looking for a job, looking for a relationship, somehow you've got to get out of your box enough to tap into that part of you that's the creator. So your life is just not in the space of responding to everything that's in it. Now, I really apologize. I did not expect to talk this long about all of this. I'm going to open the mics up. And since the topic is on synchronicities, maybe some of you will try that. And if that's something to share of some kind of synchronicity you had yourself. And, God, when we get on this, I was going to just try to get the ball rolling, and then I hogged the whole thing. So I'm sorry. Here we go. We're opening the mics. Let's see if this, if you got background noise, keep it down.
All callers are unmuted.
Anybody have something to share?
Someone's heavy breathing again.
Yeah, I know it. Let me see if I can see
that. Through the line. Okay.
Anyone have anything to share?
This is Lone Wolf. I'm speaking from Sedona. I gained much synchronicity tonight listening to everyone that tuned me into better understanding of myself. And I want to thank Jim and Terry and all the people that participated. It was truly a blessing to me tonight listening. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Jim is right here, and he appreciates very much what you just said.
My honor.
There we go.
Thank you.
And we are honored to have a medicine man, Native American, that holds so much beautiful energy, supporting the energy of our calls. So we thank you for that.
Wado.
Anyone else have something to say?
I have a question for Lone Wolf.
No, yes, that is Canada, right?
Yeah.
I know that voice.
Lone Wolf.
Yes, ma'am.
My friend's daughters are on a reserve. And she's in a care center because she is paralyzed from napkin. And anyways, the daughters, the one daughter jumped her other daughter with her friends and hung her and left her. And then she got rescued by a passerby and she lived. And anyways, Dwayne was saying that maybe you could kind of help out with those two, because I know both girls are beautiful beings, and I'm just concerned because now they're both back on the reserve while they await the trial and everything else because of what happened.
But you know,
may
why don't I, go ahead. I was just going to send you each other's emails, and you can get into a contact with each other like that. Is that okay with you, Lone Wolf?
That would be fine. I have a simple answer for her, though, that I believe will have value to all that might hear my voice.
Okay.
From what I've understood from the elders and the chiefs and the great Hopi leaders and others that I've had the honor of sitting with over the last 30 years, there is so much being written of truth of the great transition and how the divine female has suffered for so very, very many years. From what I understand and what I have been told, we agreed to play these roles when we came here to help end, notice the word end, duality of negative and positive. It's time that negative leaves the building. And all the suffering and things that we've all experienced have been part of the experience of understanding to be able to let go of the lesser There's only one way, and that's forward, as the Hopi would say, as Grandfather Martin's favorite statement. And the women that have suffered through these things, please know that it is recognized in this universe, and you are honored greatly, greatly, greatly for the roles that you have all played. So please be and find peace with those words. They just come through me. Sometimes it's not lone wolf speaking. I hope that has helped you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I will exchange emails, and if there's anything else that can be shared. Anyone else have something to share tonight? Has anyone had an experience that is either a synchronicity or a miracle or a personal kind of growth through coming into our calls that they want to share?
This is Don. And one thing I have noticed is a lot of times questions I'll be thinking about will be asked by somebody else on the Wednesday call. That happens quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I notice that on the Wednesday calls, oftentimes I get two people asking the same question. And it's how people are just vibing at the same place at the same time. Thank you, Don, for sharing. Anyone else?
Hello, this is Shirley, Alaska, and I have both my knees torn meniscus, and I've recently started yoga, and I'm having miraculous healing of my knees. Thank you.
Wonderful. Did I tell you to get ozonated, what's it called, ozonated olive oil? Did I tell you about that?
No. But I will.
Okay, this is really cheap. It's ozonated olive oil. Just go look it up. Ozonated olive oil testimonials. It's a miracle product for a lot of problems and for things like skin problems, knee problems, joint problems, arthritis. I don't remember all the things. Ozone is one of the greatest healing things on the planet, and it heals so much stuff that it's not legal here. But it's actually in Germany and in Russia, it's a legal modality. Doctors use it, thousands of them, as part of their healing practice. And some doctors do it here, but they take a chance. And one day I'm going to do a talk about some of the healing stuff we know about. But you can get a bottle of it for $20 for a big bottle, $10 for a small bottle. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on eBay. Just do a search. Ozonated olive oil. Okay.
I'll do that. I've been using frankincense and a peppermint type.
If you use it and get results, be sure and email me so that I can tell other people. Okay.
Okay, I will. Okay, thank you.
You know, Nikola Tesla is the guy that did this, and he used to make ozonated olive oil when he first made his first high-voltage Tesla coil, and he was selling it to naturopathic doctors was he in Canada or upstate New York? Wherever he was selling it, and that's how he funded some of his stuff. Ozonated olive oil. Yeah.
Are you aware that he's actually alive? He has been reincarnated as Patrick Flanagan. That's his name.
I am aware that Patrick says that, and I haven't done. I mean, I know Patrick. I met Patrick.
You have?
And yes, I did. He lives in Sedona. He lives in the Sedona area.
He does.
But you know. Patrick is brilliant. He could very well be Nikola Tesla. He could be because of his brilliance. The only thing is, he doesn't look like Nikola Tesla. And so I would have to, like, convince myself that he really was Tesla somehow.
Yeah, that's the question, doesn't he? Shouldn't he look like Tesla? I mean, that's a good question, though. I mean, because DNA binds the energy.
Maybe there's exceptions to that rule. I don't know, okay?
Can we ask the Elohim if that's possible?
I could. But they won't confirm them, okay? They would never confirm somebody something like that, okay? They wouldn't do it. It would be a violation of his free will for me to ask a question about him.
How about if he asked it himself, if he asked it?
Yeah, but he probably won't want to ask it because he's not going to give up his power because he wants to be Tesla, and he's not going to want some source to say, no, you're not. I mean, if he was paying attention to our work and he believed in our work, he might consider it. But otherwise, we're just a bunch of wackos out there, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, this is how it works. You know, even when somebody asks a question about past life stuff, oftentimes it's not in the best interest for them to comment on it. And the reason is, like, let's suppose I know somebody that I knew in a past life. And I knew it in advance. I'd avoid all the steps it took to develop a rapport this life. I think that it was already pre-configured. And if I would have known that Brian Holland worked with me in another lifetime and I was in the superior position, and I try to play that card, I probably would blow it, okay? So it had to unfold without me knowing it, okay? Same thing with DK, the same thing with Terry, the same thing with Jim. And then after you know it, after you're in the resonance of the past life thing, then they can tell you. But then you already almost always know. That's how it works. So when you're really curious as to who you were in your past life, it's not really, you know, at this point now, I don't care. I happen to know a few of my past lives. I know a couple of the ones that are prominent, and I just use it as part of a teaching mechanism.